Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Tuesday, September 6th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Guardians finally break their five-game losing streak, get back to it. Again, they have to go extra innings on Monday night. Oscar Gonzalez coming through with a two-run go-ahead double in the 10th inning, and they get it done. Emmanuel Clase closes it out. For the win, they stay in first place by a game with the Twins losing to the Yankees earlier in the day. So exactly what they sort of needed to open up this six-game road trip.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. It was a much-needed win after, you know, just a bad home stand of baseball. And, you know, it gave them a one-game lead, like you said, after the Twins lost to the Yankees. And I don't know if all is right in the world of Cleveland baseball, but it was a sigh of relief, I think, in that Cleveland dugout.
Yeah, it was. You know, Terry Francona said as much in the postgame. It's nice to see a guy come through like Oscar did when you needed that big hit. He actually went down and got a pretty good pitch down below the strike zone, and he drove it to the wall in left field. I was watching Michael Taylor sort of circle that ball in center, and he had to turn the jets on, and you could tell he knew he wasn't going to catch up to it. Oscar, you know, put a charge into that ball, you know, down in the strike zone to get it over his head. The Royals went to the strategy that the Mariners used the night before in extra innings, and that's when Jose Ramirez came to the plate to start the bottom of the 10th. They intentionally walked him. They put him on base. So Ahmed Rosario, you got your two best base runners on the bases with Gonzalez, you know, coming up after Josh Naylor popped out. You know, it worked out with Gonzalez coming through it against Seattle. Naylor grounded into a double play, and that sort of, you know, short-circuited the inning, but it worked out in the Guardians' favor on Monday night.
Yeah, Joe, it's amazing with Gonzalez. He's done this a couple times. He looks like he gets fooled on a pitch. He gets way out in front of it, but is able to, you know, keep his hands back. And, you know, when that ball left the bat, you know, just watching at home, I thought it was just a pop fly, a fly ball to, you know, left center field. But the thing just kept going. I mean, he must be really, really strong to do that.
Yeah, it must be. You know, there's no must be about it. He is a strong guy. And that's the exciting thing about him is, you know, he's growing into that power. He's still going to, you know, keep growing. He can still even fill out a little bit on his frame, too. He's got really good speed, good arm. It looks like they've found something there in a right fielder, possibly if he can continue to control the strike zone the way that he has been. He's done a really good job since being called up when he's healthy. As far as just the offense in general, what they've been lacking over the last, you know, week to 10 days plus, they have 12 hits in the game. They scored early. They scored first. They even had to resort to not necessarily a little trickery, but with a runner on third base in the second, you got the safety squeeze from Austin Hedges to score Andrés Giménez.
Yeah, I almost fell out of my chair when I saw that. I mean, that has to be the first one of the season. If not the first one, then the second one, because, you know, Francona usually doesn't do that. And I thought it was a sign of desperation, you know, that shows you after scoring, what, 4 runs in 50 innings, that they were willing to do almost anything to get a lead, to get a run in. And, you know, it worked to their advantage.
Yeah, in covering the team every day, there are things that you kind of, you know, you maybe don't want to write about sometimes because it's almost like trade secrets. You don't divulge how or when they knew or they picked up a tendency, something that the Royals were doing. All we know in talking to Terry Francona after the game was that Mike Sarbaugh, the third base coach, you know, picked up on something. He communicated it to Austin Hedges at the time, and the play was on. They sort of had a feel for it and knew what was happening in the moment. So it's not like the call came directly from the bench. Hey, let's do this right now. It was more they saw an opportunity and they went for it. Because you're right, Terry Francona doesn't call for squeeze bunts ever. The phrase that comes to mind is Tito doesn't squeeze. It just doesn't happen. We don't see it. And you know, to have it happen in a game, it wasn't like they were just going rogue and doing it on their own. But you know, they have the green light. Just like when you're stealing, if Jose Ramirez is on first base, you know that he has the green light to go whenever he feels comfortable. Well, with your best bunter at the plate in Austin Hedges and a pretty good base runner at third in Andrés Giménez, you know there's going to be the opportunity. If there's the opportunity, then those two are the guys that can definitely pull it off, and they did last night. I don't know if it does necessarily, you know, means they were desperate, but it certainly came in a desperate time. It certainly came in a time when the team was struggling to score runs. So, you know, maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, that was a great bunt by Hedges, well-timed and put it in the perfect spot. And I think, you had the stat in your game story with that there, I don't know, some ridiculous number when they score first, over 50 wins, or I'm not sure what the breakdown was.
Yeah, it was like 52-14 or something like that when they score first. And actually, it was funny because Tito had talked about that in this pregame press conference as well. He doesn't understand why they do so much better. Their splits are so ridiculous when they score first. Their slugging, their batting average, their OPS, everything is higher. When the other team scores first, it doesn't correlate. It's something that shouldn't really matter whether a team scores first or not, but it just does. When the Guardians are up by a run, they tend to hit the ball more than when they're behind by a run early. And Tito said that the thing is, if you're up by one and then you add on, if you score first and then you score next, is what he said. It means that you're getting to their pitcher and you're usually able to chase him out of the game.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a league-wide stat too. You know, the team that scores first has a big advantage, or is going to, you know, usually has the percentages are in favor of that team ending up with a win.
Yeah. As far as what they did record wise, you know, they snapped a 5-game losing skid, and they're 3-8 in their last 11 games, but still they've won 15 of their last 27, 26 of their last 46. They won back-to-back extra inning games, improved to 10-4 in extra innings, and 7-2 on the road in extra innings, which is, you know, a pretty nice stat as well. Against the Royals, This is the crazy thing. You know, they're only seven and five against the Royals this season, but they've outscored. They've scored 70 runs. There's like 70-30. They've outscored the Royals 70-34, and yet they've only won 7 of the 11 meetings between the two clubs.
Yeah, I think the third game of the regular season, they scored 17 runs. They beat them like 17-1 or 17-2 after losing the first two. Scoring one run in the first two games of the season. That's way back in April. But so, you know, I think that's probably where that differential comes from.
Yeah,
so,
they're plus 22 at Kauffman Stadium, but they're 4-4 overall in the ballpark.
Yeah, and you know, Kansas City usually plays these guys tough, and you know, I was looking at the lineups last night, Joe. You know, the Guardians, with the youngest team in baseball, had three rookies in the lineup, and the Royals, with the second youngest team in baseball, had five rookie position players in the starting lineup. So, you know, that's a lot of young guys running around out there.
Yeah, one of those rookies, of course, Bobby Witt Jr., robbed a fellow rookie, Tyler Freeman, of extra bases with a spectacular diving catch, diving stop down the third baseline, and threw him out. And then after the game, Tyler Freeman, you know, he's talking to reporters, and he said, yeah, Freeman's cousin actually played on the same high school team as Bobby Witt back in Texas. So Freeman actually, you know, he went right to his locker, got on his phone, texted his cousin, and told his cousin to give Bobby Witt a hard time about you know, taking an extra base hit away from him in a Major League Baseball game.
Yeah, that was a heck of a play by Witt, and it was a great stop, but the best play part was him getting up on his feet and making that throw across the diamond to get Freeman by like a half step, and just, you know, this he's legit, man. He's a fun player to watch.
Yeah, he leads the Royals with 20 home runs too. That's you know, it's pretty impressive, just what he's done at the plate this year. Certainly worthy of consideration as well in the Rookie of the Year balloting. But you know, if you're going to mention him, you definitely got to mention Stephen Kwan, who started off the game yesterday with in first two at bats, two consecutive hits, adding up over 483 is his batting average in games at Kauffman Stadium this year. The Royals are going to be happy. Royals and Royals fans are going to be happy to see Stephen Kwan leave on Wednesday and head to Minnesota, because he has beat them up at the top of the order this season against the Royals for Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, he could add four straight hits last night. You know, the first two hits, and then, you know, Witt robs him in the fifth inning with the line drive to third, and then he lines out to the shortstop in the seventh. So it's good to see that, because, you know, to me, he looked tired during that last homestand. He really kind of struggled. The whole top of the lineup did, and to see Kwan, you know, start that game with two hits in his first two at bats, that's a good sign.
Yeah, two hits and two line drive outs, and he was definitely using some of that birthday energy. It was his 25th birthday yesterday. So maybe he had some, a funfetti cake in the clubhouse to celebrate. I don't know, but, you know, definitely 25 years old looks pretty good. When you start the game 2-for-2 in a ballpark where you were at one time last night, he was batting up well over 500 in his at bats at Kauffman Stadium. So, you know, pretty impressive for the rookie, as well. You got to mention Josh Naylor. Go after the Royals tied the game on a two-run homer by Drew Waters. Josh Naylor comes up, immediately answers with a go-ahead solo home run in the sixth off Brady Singer. 421 feet, just missed getting it to the fountains in right center. That ties his longest home run of the season. The one he hit May 9th against the White Sox was also pretty impressive blast there. 17 home runs. Of his 17 home runs, 12 have either given the Guardians the lead or tied the game. So we said this before. We did a whole podcast on Josh Naylor being one of the most clutch power hitters that we've seen in a Guardians uniform since Jim Thome.
Yeah, that was a big home run right there. Like you said, a good response after, you know, Tristan gives up the two-run homer to tie it up. And, you know, he's done that the whole season. You know, he had coming off a quiet August, but, you know, hopefully this gets him jump-started for, you know, the stretch run here for September and, you know, the first week of October, and gets him going again, because they definitely need his bat, Joe.
Yeah, it was nice to see that happen. And like you mentioned, Tristan McKenzie. McKenzie kind of labored through that start yesterday. You could tell that the Royals were trying to make him work and work deep in counts and foul off some pitches. And the strategy worked. I mean, he was up over 100 pitches in the sixth inning. So he got in a little bit of trouble, but they called on Sam Hentges to get him out of it, and Hentges came through as well.
Yeah, Hentges is he's been really, really hot. You know, I was surprised Francona used him as much as he did. You know, this guy pitched 2 innings Friday, he pitched 2 innings on Sunday, and he comes back last night and pitches, you know, 1 1/3. You know, he comes in and after McKenzie gives up the sacrifice fly to Taylor to tie the game to bring him into I think it tied it.
Right. Yeah, it's hide the game.
Yeah, tied the game, and then you know Hedges comes in and or Hankins comes in and retires 4 straight guys. You know, he just looks like, to me, he looks like a totally different pitcher, Joe. He looks like he's really found himself, kind of just he throws that slider now, the curveball, and he's not messing around. He's not walking guys. He's really challenging people. You know, he struck out what two of the 4 guys he faced last night. And it looks like, you know, he's kind of like a heavy duty reliever that, you know, Francona has really, you know, what, pitched 3 times in the last 4 games.
Yeah, and sort of the thing with Hentges has been working him and getting knowing that the stuff is there and getting him there in terms of being able and ready in the right like headspace to pitch in those situations. Tito talked in the pregame again yesterday about his two-seam fastball movement, his sinker, and just how most guys have to take a little bit of velocity off to get that kind of movement that he has, and he's thrown it at 97, and that's that you're talking about like Emmanuel Clase type stuff in that regard coming from the left side, and it looks like he's thrown it out of your to a left-handed batter. It looks like he's thrown it out of your right ear flap. As far it's because his long limbs, long levers, a lot of there's a chance that his mechanics can get out of whack a little bit. So, they simplified things, and that's really worked for him so far. And Tito said that, there's a lot to like, and it's the reason why he's sort of been patient and stuck with Hentges as much as he has. And he said people are now clamoring, oh, pitch him in the eighth inning, pitch him in these high leverage situations. And he said, yeah, we just had to get him there. We had to get him to that point. And now it's starting to pay off.
Yeah, what, the guy's 6'7", about 250. I mean, he's pretty intimidating out there when he's throwing like that. I mean, when he's throwing strikes, I mean, it's fun to watch him pitch, and you can see that development. You know, last year he was kind of in and out, starter, reliever. You know, there you really didn't know what to make of him, and this year he's been, you know, full time in the bullpen. And I was thinking, Joe, I mean, if they have to have some bullpen games going down the stretch here, if, you know, Savali and Plesac aren't back, you know, would you start Hedges as an opener for the first 2 innings? I don't know. It just kind of popped into my head.
I don't know if I, maybe you start Brian Shaw again and let him go an inning or two, and then bring Hentges in for 2 innings, and see if you can get him that way. Maybe you don't start him against the leadoff or whatever to start the game. We've saw what happened last year when they tried to go with him as a starter. I think you can get more out of him, if you open with somebody else and then just come in with 2 3 innings of Sam Hentges dealing the way he did last night. But I'm sure the thought has crossed Tito's mind. There's a lot of possibilities when he's pitching the way he did the last 2 nights.
Yeah, that's an exciting prospect, especially if, you know, they don't, if they're unable to kind of fill these 2 spots in the rotation.
Right.
You know, you're probably going to have to mix and match here. You know, go in. You know, maybe, I don't know, twice every week, every time, every, you know, twice every time through the rotation, you're going to have to, you know, kind of find an answer here.
Right. Yeah. Before we get to that rotation question, you said the word prospect. I just have to jump in with something that Tito mentioned while we were talking about Sam Hinchis, actually, yesterday in pregame. He mentioned a guy that's at AAA right now, who's very much along the same physical profile as Hinchis, a lefty. His name is Tim Herron, and he pitched in a couple of games in spring training. I don't know if you recall seeing him, but he said that Herron has, he said, don't look at the statistics, don't look at the numbers, because right now his numbers aren't very good, but his stuff, very much similar to Hinchis, very much similar to, he actually brought up Andrew Miller in terms of the stuff that this kid can throw. A big tall kid, 6'6", 250, Tim Herron. He said he recalled a game in spring training where Herron came in to pitch, and he said Brian Sweeney, the bullpen coach, called down to the dugout and told Tito, wait till you get a load of this kid. And he came out and he was impressed. So you had Terry Francona not only raving about Sam Hinchis, but also raving about a kid at AAA who's, you know, hasn't quite gotten things figured out yet in terms of what the results are, but the stuff is looking pretty incredible.
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, who knows?
And that was unprompted. He brought this kid up as we were talking about Hinchis. He brought this kid's name up unprompted. So you know that the kid left an impression.
Yeah, that's a name to remember.
As far as the rotation, you brought that up again. Yesterday we found out Aaron Savali. No update so far on Zach Plesac, who has a fractured hand. We don't know when he'll be back. But Aaron Savali threw yesterday pregame. He's going to be, we're going to watch how he recovers today, and possibly have him long toss on Wednesday if things go well. He's suffering from inflammation in his right forearm. He got injection to try and calm that down. They're going to see how that works. But the possibility of him being able to come off when he's ready to, or when he's able to, in terms of come off the injured list on the, 14th, I guess he would be eligible to come off. The way the rotation sets up now, there's a question mark. If Cody Morris gets the start on Wednesday and stays in the rotation to start again next Monday against Los Angeles, then they would probably need somebody Tuesday or Wednesday, and that's around the time when Savali would be able to come off.
Well, that's encouraging. Yeah, that really encouraging. I wonder, I think they're going to have to be really, really careful with Savali. What, this is the third time he's been on the IL this season. But I hope he comes back that fast. That would be great.
Yeah, that's sort of the debate there that you gotta have. Is it really worth risking his overall health and, having to maybe, go for surgery if that's an option for him. If you try to pitch him and he blows something out, a third time this year.
Yeah, you don't want, when they say forearm, it's usually elbow, right?
Right.
And that's usually Tommy John, that's what they're talking about. So they better be, I know they would be very, very careful with them. And I know, Savali, talking to Savali over the weekend, he said, there's something going on in there. It's not a big thing, but it's obviously something that we have to, kind of get a hold of and calm down and get an answer to. So, it's going to be interesting just to see, when he comes back, and does he have to make a rehab start, or has he been down, a short enough time where he can just step back into the rotation?
Right. And, the initial report, the initial examination from Terry Francona said when they came back was, there's nothing structurally, wrong in there, just the inflammation. So that was a good sign. But again, you never know for sure. And you look over at what Anthony Gose has been dealing with since the beginning of July, and you sort of worry about and wonder, are both of these guys heading for some sort of surgical repair? Either in the off season or coming up here soon. All right. Want to shift gears. Want to take a look right now at the American League. MVP race and the chase for that award. Early in the year, I think Jose Ramirez had a pretty good case to go up against anybody in the league. But as the season has worn on, Aaron Judge has really sort of proven himself and pulled away from pretty much anybody else. I think it's a runaway for Judge in the American League voting right now. 54 home runs, 117 RBIs, and you know, he's playing center field and leading off. He's basically the Yankees' entire offense right now, as they are in a funk. But do you see anybody, you know, any voter out there, you know, be able to justify not voting Aaron Judge first place for the American League Most Valuable Player?
Yeah, I mean, Ohtani is always a compelling case. Don't you think, Joe? I mean, he's a pitcher. He's won 11 games. He's hit 32 home runs. I mean, you just don't see players like that. But I don't think the Yankees are where they are without Judge. You know, Judge, just to put, you know, add some perspective to his 54 home runs. Cleveland as a team has hit 102 home runs. So this guy has hit more than 50%. He would have, if he was on Cleveland's team, he would have hit more than 50% of the home runs by the whole team. So it's, you know, I think you've got to take that into consideration. And like you said, he's hitting leadoff. He's playing center field, a great center field. And they just, If he doesn't hit home runs, if he doesn't drive in runs, they don't win. Yeah. So I think that has to play a big, big part in any voter's opinion or, you know, any take on the AL MVP race. And I think right now, Joe, if the voting was announced today, he'd be the unanimous pick.
Yeah, and Ohtani would have to be in that top three. I think Jose Ramirez probably gets consideration. Top five, definitely, maybe top three, but Judge is the only guy who gets a first place vote, I think, on any ballot, and he's doing it in a year that's really advantageous for him. You know, he decided not to sign any sort of long term contract going into the season. He bet on himself basically, and it's going to pay off because he'll be a free agent and he'll be able to take the, you know, the highest offer in the, whether that comes from the Yankees or not. We saw Julio Rodriguez sign a 15-year contract for it could be 15 years and $470 million. And you know, as crazy as it sounds, Judge could actually be worth more than that.
Yeah, I mean, this guy right now, he's an 8.5 WAR. He's on pace to hit 65 home runs, you know, set the American League record, break Roger Maris's record of 61 homers in 1961. He's just having a monster year. And how can the Yankees let this guy go, Joe? I mean, they'll have to sell half. Maybe they'll make him part owner or something. Yeah. But I mean, you cannot, if you're Brian Cashman, you cannot let, you know, you can't let this guy walk out the door.
Yeah, name a wing of the ballpark after him or something. It whatever it takes to get him to stay. He pretty much has to be a Yankee for life. If you're coming from that perspective, I feel sorry for Brian Cashman because there's no, I don't feel sorry. I hate Brian Cashman. You know what threw me there was Hoynsey busting out WAR and using Hoynsey just casually dropping, oh, he's got an 8.5 WAR. Like, I believe Hoynsey sitting there looking at everybody's WAR. Come on. That's what threw me. That's what allowed me the momentary sympathy for Brian Cashman. I hate Brian Cashman. There's no way. Whatever. Oh, this is, it's maddening. All right. I'm done. I'm walking away from this podcast now. After that, after Hoynsey just slips 8.5 WAR casually into a conversation, it's like, holy cow. We've got a game tonight. We've got Shane Bieber on the mound, against the Royals. This is a game that Shane Bieber needs to go seven innings and the Guardians need to win by six runs. There's just no two ways of looking at this game.
Yeah, they do not need to go into extra innings again. Two games in a row, just, with that runner on second base, it just puts such a random, roll of the dice. And I was wondering, Joe, I didn't get to ask you this, but what were you thinking when, Class A kind of lost, it looked like a tie at the bag for the final out. What were you thinking there?
You know what? I put my head down immediately and I finished typing my game story to post it because I knew he was out, because from my vantage point and with the naked eye, it looked to me like he beat it. And I said, if they go to the replay, it's going to be overturned and the game's going to be over. So I just put my head down and I started writing because I bet on Class A there. I thought I thought it was an interesting decision not to flip the ball to Naylor there to try and take it yourself. I think he was a little bit too casual, but it worked out for him. You got to ride with Class A, man. He's been nothing but spectacular all season long.
Yeah, Matt Underwood had a great call on TV. Somebody asked him. He goes after the game. He goes, if this was a horse race, you would have said the Guardians won by a nose. But since it's a baseball game, you have to say they won by a foot.
Yeah, that was exactly it. A lot of fun at the ballpark tonight. Hoping for more of the same. This evening as Shane Bieber gets on the mound. Hoynsie, we'll check in with you tomorrow on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
All right, Joe.